when this opportunity came up, I went into it knowing that it would be a challenge, knowing that it was going to be a tough role. It was part of the appeal. I went into it with eyes wide open, but I won't lie. There were a lot of moments in there that was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? This is so hard. This is not what I thought it would be. I don't think anyone says that it's really fun to be pushed to your limit all the time. But coming out of it, it's like, wow, I made it. I did all of these things and I learned and developed a lot. If you really want to accelerate your career and get a lot of great experiences, go where the growth is happening and the growth of yourself will follow.
Great companies are all about the people. Good people become great leaders, mentors for work and life.
Welcome to Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. I'm Roman Segal, recovering marketer.
And I'm Andrew Tarvin, humor engineer. Roman and I both got our start at P&G, the Procter & Gamble company, where we had the opportunity to work with some amazing people. And as you may know, many leaders across industries got their start at P&G. In this series, through conversations with fellow P&G alums, we hope to go deeper with the leaders you already know, but want to know more about.
It's like being a fly on the wall for my mentoring coffees.
On today's show, we're talking to P&G alumni leader Zena Arnold, the Chief Digital and Marketing Officer at Kimberly-Clark. It was a great conversation about really owning your career. So here's a quick bio on Zena. Zena Arnold is an accomplished executive across CPG and technology marketing and general management. She recently joined Kimberly-Clark as their Chief Digital and Marketing Officer, leading Kimberly-Clark's global marketing teams and driving initiatives to accelerate the digital transformation of the company's brands and businesses. She was previously at Google, where she was most recently in business and operations leadership, running the U.S. Chromebooks organization and subsequently starting a global growth team. The formative years of her career were at Procter & Gamble and Kellogg's, where she held a series of brand and portfolio management roles on their biggest brands like Olay, Folgers, Pop-Tarts, and more. She holds a degree in computer science from The Ohio State University. You know, I was absolutely geeked to talk to Zena today because, one, she's a fellow computer scientist. She is a fellow Buckeye, and she worked on Pop-Tarts, which was how I started my day every single day for probably like 5 years out of college. So I was super geeked to learn from her, and really was a fantastic conversation that shows her thoughtfulness over her career. And that's not to say that everything that she has done has been perfectly mapped up and lined out in terms of what it is that she wanted to accomplish, but rather that she has a great way of reflecting on the choices that she's made and the chances that she's taken and the roles that she's really loved and the other ones that she's found a little bit more challenging. She also shared a great perspective on what it's like to be a leader as a woman and what we can all do to support underrepresented groups in the corporate environment today. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. So let's dive right in with Zena Arnold. Today, we're talking to Zena Arnold, the Chief Digital and Marketing Officer at Kimberly-Clark. Zena, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Drew. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm really excited to chat with you about your experiences. But before we do, you know, many may already know your professional story. You earned a degree in computer science from The Ohio State University and then started your career at GE before moving to P&G as an assistant brand manager, where you then rose to the ranks of senior brand manager before moving on to Kellogg, where you moved up to Kellogg Master Brand Portfolio Lead, and then spent 6 years at Google in a variety of roles, including the global head of growth for Chrome US. And then more recently, in May of 2020, you were named the Chief Digital and Marketing Officer at Kimberly-Clark. So that's quite the impressive resume. So my question for you is, growing up in Cincinnati, was that the career you imagined you would have?
No, not at all. When I was growing up, I didn't have a lot of awareness or exposure to corporate business roles. My dad's an engineer and my mom ran her own small travel agency. And as is pretty typical in Asian Indian immigrant families, mine always reinforced that I should be either an engineer, a doctor, or a scientist of some sort. When I was growing up, one of my favorite activities that I did is Odyssey of the Mind. Have you heard of that?
I don't think so. I'm also an engineer. I don't know, maybe, and I love space and stuff like that. So I'm immediately intrigued. Like, what is Odyssey of the Mind?
Oh, it's such a cool organization. It's basically where groups of students, and it happens at all age groups, are given some complex problem to solve, and you work on it together in small groups to figure it out and build solutions, and then you share with judges what your solutions are. It's super fun. And so somehow when I was growing up, I convinced myself this is what it would be like to be a working scientist. You'd be making discoveries and changing the world. And so I said, this is what I want to do. I want to be a research scientist. I want to figure out the cure for cancer, that kind of thing. So I always thought I would do that. And then it was maybe my junior year or so of high school when I got a chance to job shadow my aunt, who is exactly that. She's a research scientist working on how to develop cures for diseases. So I was so excited to go and spend time with her. And it was just a huge surprise to see that in the office, in the lab that she was in, basically being a research scientist means you're repeating the same experiments over and over in a lab. You're reading and analyzing spreadsheets. And she told me, well, it takes years to see results from these studies. So I was thinking, wait, where's the eureka moment? You know, like there is an Odyssey of the Mind and these things that I love doing. And I realized that's not what research science is about. And I thought, okay, this is not for me.
Yeah, which I think is so, I mean, it's so often true. Like, we see these things on pop culture. And so a lot of times people go into law because they see 12 Angry Men or something. And they're like, that's what being a lawyer means. And so it sounds like that same thing of, I wear a white coat and I say, I think it's this. And then suddenly you've cured something.
Yes, that's what I thought. But the reality is pretty far from that.
And so, okay, so when did business become this idea? You've gone from, okay, maybe research scientist isn't quite what I expect it to be. And then, so you go to The Ohio State University. I'm a fellow Buckeye, so I know the importance of adding the in front.
Good.
How did you decide, okay, so my route is now going to be computer science?
Yeah, well, also during high school, I started doing more and more with computers, building them, programming them. And one thing that I loved about that I didn't see in research science is you can see the results of your work right away. You can write a program, you can create something, and then, wow, you hit enter and it's done. So I thought, hey, this is an interesting area to still keep my love of science going, but do it in maybe a more responsive field.
Yeah, so. You must be a much better program than me because I hit enter or go and it's mostly just error messages that come up. But at least it's like some type of feedback. I love that.
Yeah. So I think also this was the late 90s and tech bubble was starting to form. There were a lot of really interesting companies that were coming out and this seemed like an interesting, energizing place to be. So I thought, let's do it.
I love it. And so I'm curious, if you think back to those days growing up in Cincinnati, pre or post thinking about computers, and then to yourself now, how would you say you're similar to your younger self? And how would you say you're a little bit different?
I'd say I'm still pretty impatient, which means I don't want to get involved in things like research science that take many, many years to see your results. I'd say probably, though, the biggest thing that's changed is when growing up, I'd always been conditioned to think that great things happened as a result of individual efforts and ways of working. And as I've grown up, I've realized more and more that all great things happen due to a team of dedicated people working together, which is part of what I really love about the path I've taken in the business world.
I like that articulation a lot because I do think you're, for whatever reason, we are taught, hey, it's this individual person. We think of the lone genius. I mean, speaking of scientists, we think of Einstein working completely on his own and coming up with these things. And it's like, no, actually, he did a lot of collaboration as well. So I love that articulation of the team focus. And so speaking of that path, I'm curious how that's gone for you? Because certainly taking a look at your resume, taking a look at LinkedIn, like even for example, just the time at P&G, it's like, well, you went from ABM on Folgers to then the brand manager on Olay for North America, and then senior brand manager on Olay Regenerous globally. It seems like, oh, that's the perfect stepwise career thing that you imagine. And it seems so linear and smooth. And is that the reality of it? Or is that just a perception that we look at it on a piece of paper? Were there any roadblocks or inflection points during that early career?
Yeah, there were several. I think it's easy when you're looking back and in a quick summary that, oh, sure, these all look like very logical, planned out moves. But in the moment, they're not always. And that's actually as it should be, right? You know, one of the things that I do tell a lot of my mentees is to try to take chances. And I'd say I take that advice most of the time. If you do look at my career in the early years, especially, it was much more focused on your, call it traditional rotation at P&G. But there were definitely some interesting things that I had to go through and choices that I had to make. As I was listening actually to your podcast some weeks ago, I heard Tammy Hurwitz recently, and she talked about when P&G divested the Folgers business, and that brought back a lot of memories for me since I was working on the brand at that time as well. And at the time, I had less than 5 years of experience. And when I heard the news, I thought my world was ending. I had wrapped up so much of my identity in working for P&G and going through these steps and these rotations. And this was not supposed to happen. And the good thing about going through that and figuring it out, just realizing it was an incredibly myopic view for several reasons. I mean, there were other people who had put 30 plus years of their career into that brand and into P&G that were going through this. And I couldn't imagine what that must be like. But also at the end of the day, I think it really brought a realization to me that large companies are really all about driving the business as a whole. They're not responsible for any one individual's career path. And I think learning that lesson at that point was really valuable because I learned, hey, look, I've got to think about what I can contribute and where's the best place for me to do that. And then it's up to me to make that match. There really isn't going to be a company that's going to do it for me. And I was fortunate in that situation that I was able to find a great role within P&G on Olay. It was great and had some more wonderful experiences there. But just that realization, I think, and that awareness, which coming early in my career, I think was a really good thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think you make a great point of just how important that career ownership is. I love that articulation of like, yeah, the role of P&G as an entire organization, as great as you may have been to the organization, is not to say, okay, how does this billion-dollar company make sure that Zena has a career that she wants? But maybe a little bit bigger. But at the same time, you don't always feel that. So I think it's a great reminder for people like, yeah, ultimately you are the one who owns that career. And so I'm curious about this because I don't know if you have this similar feeling to me because I also grew up in Cincinnati. Also went to Ohio State, also did a degree in computer science. And for me, working at P&G was this fulfillment of a lifelong, almost like perception, at least growing up in Cincinnati, right? It's a global headquarters, you have it. And so I know when I left to start my own thing, there was like, my mom was supportive because she's supportive of everything. She's amazing in that way. But a lot of her friends or even some of my friends are like, how do you leave a company like that? So I'm curious because in 2010, you make the jump to Kellogg's. And so first of all, not only do you leave P&G, but you leave the state of Ohio for the state of Michigan, which is for those of us that go to Ohio State, seems a little off. But I'm curious, how did you know that it was the time to make that move? How did you know that, okay, this is the opportunity that I want to seek next in terms of that owning of your own career?
Yeah, well, there were a couple of reasons that was a good and right move for me and my family at the time. So one of the greatest legacies of P&G in my life is it's where I met my husband. So he was a fellow P&Ger as well, and he had gotten this great opportunity at Kellogg's. And he said, well, I don't want to move my wife to small town Michigan unless there's also a great role for her there too. And luckily there was. So we made the move. But also for me, thinking about what I wanted to do next and get some more different varied experiences, it was the right time. I was enjoying the work I was doing a lot on Olay, but always open to wanting to try some new and different things. And the opportunity to have the role that I did when I moved to Kellogg's, was running Pop-Tarts marketing, which was so much fun. It was just a really interesting one, a new challenge, a new consumer group to go after. So yeah, I think back to the lesson I was talking about, learning that my career really is in my own hands. I thought about what would make sense for me and for my husband and our family together. So we made the leap.
Yeah. Well, and I love the Pop-Tarts. I'm a huge Pop-Tart fan. In fact, one of my greatest regrets while living in New York City was I never got a chance to go to the Pop-Tart store while it was open. I kept on, it was time during a busy time of my life, and I was like, I'll go next week. And then by the time I went, it was up for a while, but I missed it completely. So it is a great regret of mine.
Oh, you did miss it. It was an incredible experience.
Sure. Just rub it in, Zina. Just rub it in. But I'm curious, though, you say that you get this point of, okay, I knew it was about time. What's a trigger for people to know that? Because I think sometimes people, especially some of our listeners, they're wondering, okay, is it time for me to look at either another role within my company or maybe a different company for say, et cetera. Was there some type of trigger that you knew that it's like, okay, I've done what I wanted to do on Olay Regenerist, that I can start to seek something else? Or was it just more, well, this opportunity happened to come up, so I guess it's time?
I always think about it that you should look at, is the work that you're doing energizing you? Are you learning something new and interesting? And do you have good support from your management and from the rest of your team? And if you don't have at least two of those things, then it's time in my mind to sort of start looking and seeing what else is out there, because the Holy Grail is having all of those things. And I've found when I have all those things, I'm really happy. I'm doing well and contributing a lot. And so for me, as we were thinking about what we wanted to do next and where we wanted to go, and also the experience of moving and living outside of Cincinnati, since I did grow up there, though it was Michigan, I said, we still need to try something a bit different, a bit new. And yeah, it was the right move for all of those reasons.
Yeah, well, I love that. I love the breakdown of those three, because it does give you some criteria, because I think so often people are like, oh, I'm just not sure. And so I guess the next question is, right, so you move, and you already talked about the importance kind of a family. So then a few years later, you move to working at Google out in California. So another family move, this time with both your husband and you going from Kellogg to Google. And so I'm curious, how did that similar criteria that was made, what was that process like? How did the whole family part of it come into the decision making to say, hey, now we're going from California or going from Michigan now to much further away, California?
Yeah, it was that same framework of thinking about, am I learning something? Am I enjoying the work? And am I energized by it? Do I have the support? All of those things. And my husband as well. I think for us too, we were realizing this was now, what, 8+ years ago, the importance of digital marketing and the importance of tech companies in the marketing ecosystem. And some advice that I had gotten from a great mentor of mine said, yeah, if you really want to accelerate your career and get a lot of great experiences, go where the growth is happening, and the growth of yourself will follow that. So when this opportunity came up, we thought, hey, this is going to be really interesting. For me, it was actually also especially appealing because of that computer science degree. And I thought, oh, this is going to be awesome going back to tech and now with all the marketing skills that I've learned along the way. So there it was really about not in particular the role, but more this is going to be a really broadening experience from an industry standpoint to work and understand how tech works and hopefully internalize that and be able to take it to other places.
Yeah. Yeah. Go where the growth is happening, I think is really interesting. Like you said, your own growth will follow. And so do you remember, how did the conversation play out around the dinner table to say, hey, this is what's happening? Was it like one of you coming home and saying, hey, I think I want to do this? Was it something you thought about beforehand and like it slowly came to realization? Was it like, hey, this thing is here and we're moving tomorrow? How does that actual like change come in?
No, it was recruiters that had reached out about it. And at the time, 8+ years ago, Google hadn't really been doing a lot of bigger traditional brand building marketing. They've always been experts, of course, on the digital side, but not broad brand architecture, if you will, and that thing. And so I went to work on Google Play, which is the content store for Android. And at the time, Android, despite being more prevalent in terms of number of devices that the Play Store is on, we lagged in terms of people engaging, people buying versus Apple. And a lot of people just didn't know or understand what content on Android looked like. And, you know, obviously Apple has got an extremely strong brand and the iTunes brand. So there was a pretty big uphill battle there. And the leadership at the time said, okay, we've been doing the digital marketing to get the bottom of the funnel and we have that optimized, but there's really only a set amount of that you can do without going further up in the funnel and building more of a brand. So they were really interested in my background to come in and help with some of that strategic thinking because most of the marketers there at the time didn't have this sort of background that we get at P&G. So yeah, it was this interesting opportunity that I had. And again, talking to my husband about it, and he also had a lot of friends who worked at Google, and being in digital marketing and specializing in that, obviously he worked with them closely. So we both said, hey, this could be interesting. Let's speak with some people and see what happens. And I think it was a relatively quick process. From what I've heard, some people are interviewing for months and months, but for us, it was, oh, you're interested. Great. Then let's get you out here. And we were able to keep the interview schedules and everything in sync. And so we got our offers around the same time and we started the same day. So I always joke because it's happened twice now with the Arnolds, it's buy one, get one. And we both made the leap again to Google.
Which, yeah, I think is so wonderful. And so I'm curious how I'm sure, as you mentioned, you have a number of mentees and certainly direct reports and things like that. And as you are thinking about the advice that you're giving to them about work-life balance or managing both career and family and life, is the advice, hey, marry someone really, really smart who you can then get these multiple jobs together? Like what perspective as a leader do you give others when navigating this space?
Yeah, I think you need to think through what your individual goals are and then what your collective goals are as a family. And though it sounds like it was absolutely perfect and we both made all these jumps perfectly together, it hasn't been. There have definitely been things that I've had to give up and he's had to give up along the way that would have probably been different if we were a single career family. But we knew that there would be these trade-offs and that ultimately, if we were advancing overall as a family, that's what was important. So I tell mentees today that the same thing is have a conversation with your spouse if they're very serious about their career as well and figure out, are there certain times when one person's career will take the lead? Are there other times when you both want to be able to go after something together? And what are the opportunities where you'll have the highest chances of doing that? So, example, I talked about when we considered the move to Kellogg. Really, if that hadn't have worked out for me, since that one was where my husband led, we probably wouldn't have done it because there aren't that many other career opportunities in smaller town Michigan. Moving to a place like the Bay Area, the great thing is there are a lot of other opportunities. So even if something hadn't have worked out for one of us at Google, there still would have been a lot of other opportunities. So just thinking about and balancing all of those things, but also knowing that the path isn't going to be a perfectly smooth one. And that's a part of life and marriage in general. But even in careers, that you've got to expect that there's going to be some points at which you'll be maybe slowed down where you don't necessarily want to be. But as long as you are both feeling together, there are things that you're achieving that will get you to ultimately where you want to go.
Yeah, which I think, I mean, it speaks in some ways like back to that ownership piece, but then making it a co-ownership thing of, hey, us together and both of our careers and that focus. So I love that give and take and the conversation element to it. And so one of the things that you mentioned as we're speaking of advice to mentees and others is you said one of the criteria that you use is the work energizing to you? And you have a manager who is supportive. So I'm curious, how do you do that for the people you work with? How do you try to create that environment so that when they're looking at their set of criteria of three, they're like, oh, okay, this actually fills all those things as opposed to I need to go somewhere else.
I think as a leader, you need to invest the time to understand that about all of your people. It's really important to say and ask, hey, what motivates you? And take both the verbal answer and the action cues that you see, because some people I've found, I'm sure this is true even of myself, is that you might say one thing, but then truly when you see your actions and where you devote your time and where you get the most energy from, it's in a different place. When I was at Google, the majority of the time that I was there, I was in marketing and loved it. And I had an opportunity the last few years that I was there because the product management team, and in tech companies, product management is really where the majority of the strategic decisions of the product are made, similar to brand management at P&G. And so there, I had the opportunity to move into the product team. The leader that I had worked with there said, oh, you're not a typical marketer. You ask a lot of business questions. Why don't you come over and head up this team? And so I made that jump, and I absolutely loved the learning experience that I got from it. But it was really hard. And after doing it for a little while, I thought, I'm really glad I got this experience. I'm really glad that I tried this. But really, where I'm most energized is marketing. And so that's when this great role that I have now at Kimberly-Clark came up, and I was ready to move into that. So I think if you had asked me before I did this role, I would have said, of course, general management is where I want to go. I do have more of a business slant on marketing, especially at a place like Google, where marketing is typically more pure marketing and communications focused. But then once I actually did it, I realized, well, I am not actually getting the energy that I want to from this. And I think back to where I'm the happiest and feel like I'm doing the best, it is in marketing roles. And so then I made that move. So I think understanding from people what they want to do is really important, but then watching and also bringing awareness to them that, hey, you said that you really wanted to get into general management, but I don't see you getting really excited about these P&L statements. I see you getting really excited about creating this amazing digital marketing experience, and helping people and bringing awareness to them if they don't already have it is important.
Yeah. Well, I love that distinction between the saying what you say you want versus what you are actually energized by. And that from this perspective, or at least this lens, you're saying, hey, it was a great learning experience. And I do think a lot of times, it's especially true in dating, is that a lot of times you're dating people to find out, oh, I don't want someone who does blank, but you thought maybe I did. And I think it's very true in careers as well, as sometimes you have to do a career or try a job or shadow, even similar going back to the you shadowing your aunt for a little bit to be like, oh, this isn't quite what I wanted. And so in that moment, so in this last role at Google, did you have that mindset while in the thick of things where you like, okay, this is a learning experience and maybe it's going to help me like later? Or was it like, I've made a terrible mistake. What am I doing? This is awful. Was it like, where does this great perspective on a situation come, in the moment or after?
Well, I'd say I went into it knowing that it would be a challenge. So the role in particular was, I was working and heading up our marketing for Chromebooks, and this was going into more of a overall go-to-market role, which had sales and operations and some other things under it as well on all the commercial side of the business. And so I thought this is a really interesting broadening perspective, and I want to get it. I knew it would be hard because we were so new in the space. If you think about computers, there's always been Windows and Mac, Apple for many years, and Chromebooks was this new upstart trying to come in and take over this category. And so for me, knowing that it was going to be a tough role in starting a lot of this stuff up was part of the appeal of it. And I think I went into it with eyes wide open that this isn't going to be easy and there's going to be a lot of challenge in it. So I think it was the right attitude and opinion to go into it with. But I won't lie, there were a lot of moments in there that was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? This is so hard. This is not what I thought it would be. And in the moment, yeah, a lot of frustration at certain points along the way. But I liken it a lot to what I'm sure the boot camp experience is like. I've never done it and probably never will. But thinking through, I don't think anyone says that it's really fun to be pushed to your limit all the time. But coming out of it, it's like, wow, I made it through that. I did all of these things and I learned a lot and developed a lot. So that's absolutely how I felt coming out of it.
Yeah, and I think there's definitely moments that you'll have in your career or in life where you're like, I didn't like it necessarily. It was really tough in the moment, but I'm glad that I did it afterwards because of that learning experience or because of what you gained from it. And so I'm curious, because now at Kimberly-Clark, as the Chief Digital Marketing Officer, this is a new role at the company. This was created and then you're there. So I'm curious, how do you approach a role that didn't exist before? Do you find that makes it easier in some ways? Does it make it harder? What's been your perspective bringing life into something that wasn't there?
Yeah, I love it. I'm excited by that challenge, and especially for me coming back to marketing after a couple of years away from it has been just lovely. I'm really happy to be doing the work that I really love to do. I think that it's a really interesting inflection point that a lot of traditional companies are at today. We've typically, and this is how I grew up at P&G, grown up in this mindset of marketing is general management, and the marketing parts of our jobs weren't really all that complicated because 15, 20 years ago, it was mostly, okay, how am I going to run a TV plan and radio plan, my print and coupons? And really, there were just a limited number of variables and levers that you would turn up and down to run your business. And it's really just completely changed over the past 10 years, at least, where now, because of the explosion of digital, and not just digital in terms of digital as a channel, but digital as in that's how people are living their lives, there's a lot that's evolved and shifted. And I think marketing is really changing, that it's not just about following a very strict prescribed plan anymore. It's not just about driving mass awareness. It's about building relationships with consumers. And that's the most exciting part, is how do we evolve and grow and transform our organization to be better structured to tackle that and to grow that. So it's a really good time. I think that the definition of what a great marketer is, especially in CPG, is changing, that now it needs to be much more about specialization in certain areas, developing expertise in many of these digital channels and landscapes to be able to not just deliver a message there, but build that relationship, but get a lot of great data and insights from there. And it's all new. So here, I think now the way that orgs are evolving is to focus much more on specializing and getting unique skill sets, especially in areas of data, to be able to really tap into what a lot of small upstart companies have done really, really well, and we've been a bit slower at.
Well, in some ways, it's a fascinating, not necessarily culmination, not saying that it's the last role or anything like that, but it's an interesting coming together of some of those previous experiences that you talked about, whether that's computer science and then also this idea, even back to the researcher in you of the Odyssey days of liking that discovery of it being slightly new things in a new role, but that combination of marketing and tech in some ways, or at least the frontier of digital. It's a really fascinating role that seems like brings some of those ideas together and gives you that opportunity to lead in that way.
And now a word from our sponsor. Today, we're talking to P&G Alumni Network board member, Luann Eckert-Lynch, who is the co-chair of the P&G Alumni Network's Women's Forum, a group focused on accelerating the professional progress and leadership of female P&G alumni worldwide. Luann, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Drew.
So I'm curious, where did the idea of the Women's Forum come from?
Basically, we began as an entity in the mid-2000s. Once the Alumni Forum in general was formed and began to have conferences every 2 years, women connected, and just as we did in the company, decided that there would be a benefit for us to connect as women and for us to have an overarching leadership team. I took over in 2010 and have attended the past, I think, four conferences, and our involvement in the conferences has grown in terms of contributions in a nice way. For example, in Madrid, our most recent conference, over 50% of the attendees were women alumni, and 50% of the presenters were very powerful women presenting throughout the conference. And I'm really proud of that growth and development. And we've played a part in that by our involvement in planning of the events, as well as our involvement in actually being in many of the sections of the event, et cetera.
And what a great way to contribute to that representation and that diversity of thought, and to give people to the opportunity to see that and hear from great women leaders. And I know you also, the group did some cool things for even the most recent International Women's Day. What were some of those activities that you all did?
For me, I was very proud of the fact that we partnered with the Alumni Foundation Committee to actually promote International Women's Day, be a part of that day, and to share examples of how the P&G Alumni Foundation has supported the economic empowerment of women worldwide. And part of our connection to that is our board. I have a board of 11 women. We now have great global reach, and we are committed to the foundation, and we put our money where our mouth is, and we have 100% participation of our members in donations to the foundation. Because we believe in it. Empowerment is one of the top three facets of our mission. And this is a way for us to give back, not only financially, but also by our time and our efforts in sharing the great things that are happening, contributions made by P&G alumni worldwide to support women internationally.
Yeah, which I think is fantastic. So if people want to learn a little bit more or get involved with the Women's Forum, how do they do that?
Number one, they can contact me. Number two, they can go to pgalums.com for information. Definitely make sure you're enrolled in that. And secondly, we have our own LinkedIn site. Currently over 1,700 PNG alum women are part of that site. So those are all great ways for you to get involved. And I can hook you up with other people that are involved in your area and make sure that you're involved in chapters, and also make sure that you have an opportunity to be a part of this wonderful organization.
And I love it. Well, Luann, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Drew.
And now back to our show.
As you think about the road ahead, we're entering 2021 now, what do you see as the most significant career challenges, either for people on your team or in general, maybe for the business, but for the upcoming year?
Well, there's obviously been a lot of change over the past year on a lot of fronts, the pandemic and consumer behavior, but then also the accelerating of income inequality, the social justice reckoning that's come to a head. I'm really interested to see how all of these things develop over time, because I think the deepest repercussions won't actually show up for a while. But all of these things that have happened, now more than ever, we can't think of consumers as one-dimensional users of our products anymore. You know, the most successful brands are taking all of these macro trends and circumstances into account and truly doing people-based marketing.
So that's where I'm urging my team to evolve to, deepening our understanding of consumers and building relationships with them. And to know that these things are always evolving, it means we have to have the agility to adapt. And what I've seen my team do during the pandemic and across the industry, in fact, it shows it can be done. We just need to accept that this is the new normal, everything changing all the time. It's somewhat scary, but also an exciting place to be.
Yeah, that adaptation, that key, because yeah, that's the biggest, probably maybe the one of the biggest lessons from 2020 is just how uncertain things are going to be and that you can never know. But if you're able to adapt in those ways, you can find success and do that, hopefully as a team or as a product. So Zina, one of the other things we know that for some types of leaders, particularly for women, they face additional challenges that, to be perfectly fair, like men don't always have to face. So I'm curious, have you felt that challenge for yourself? And how do you handle that as a leader within the industry?
Yeah, there have been a lot of those moments over my career. In my experience, it's been an interesting paradox because on one hand, I personally don't feel that there have been a lot of things that have been held back from me, though I'm sure there are that I'm just not aware of. The interesting part, though, is that I believe the expectations are often much higher for women and women of color. So not only do you have to figure out the solution with the most impact, it also has to be the fastest or the cheapest, and you have to do it while being nice and agreeable. And I've seen a lot more latitude given to men on, oh, that's a brilliant solution, we just have to take the time to do it, or we have to figure out a way how to afford it. And sometimes women are dinged for the same solution because, well, that's a great solution, but it's too fast, or I'm sorry, too slow or too expensive. And I just think that certain behaviors are more expected from men in power, like, oh, they're a hard charger and they're given that pass, whereas women are often seen as too aggressive if things aren't done exactly the right way. So I think that it's hard because there have been a lot of great opportunities that I've been given. I feel fortunate for that. But often the expectations are so much higher that it almost makes it impossible to succeed in some cases. So there's a number of things that I do myself and I try to tell my mentees to think about when they're in these situations of super high and maybe even impossible expectations is first to get very clear on what you're expected to do. And second, find the right sponsors of the work to ensure that they can also help tell the story. Because sometimes, again, the way that you do things is really important and it's not always perceived the same way by different people. The more folks, especially in your senior leadership, that you're able to bring along and have them understand your perspective, they can also help and be advocates for you and for your particular style. This is something that I think a lot of people don't realize is when, for example, I mentioned men are given sometimes latitude on things, that's just their style to be XYZ way. Women aren't given that because they don't have those connections with other people that can advocate for their own particular and unique style. So yeah, I think it's a combination of two things, really. Of course, delivering great work, but then ensuring that all the right people know and understand the how behind it, and you've taken the time to form those relationships to help them be advocates on your behalf.
Yeah, which I think is great advice to share. And so on the flip side, I guess, for those people that you're approaching for that advocacy, or if you're a leader of an organization who is a man or whatever, that isn't maybe aware of these things coming on, what do you recommend, or what are things that they could do to be more supportive?
I think just showing up and offering the support is a huge first step. So if you've got women, minorities on your team, any underrepresented group, really, making sure that they know that you as a leader are there for them, that you understand that their experience might be different than that of the majority, and telling them that you have an open door to be able to listen to those experiences, I think is really important. And then I think as a more junior person, taking the time to also understand the challenges that your boss or these potential sponsors have and what are some ways that you could help with that. Being proactive about that has always opened doors for me versus just saying, hey, I'd like to be your mentee, so mentor me. I think a lot of very busy and senior people, even if they would like to do that, just to say they can do it, they don't have the time. But if you're able to come to them with, hey, here's a problem you're working on and some thoughts from my point of view on that, I've found that's a really great way to approach people. And I appreciate that when people approach me with that as well to make that engagement.
Which I think is great advice. I remember hearing from my manager at P&G, he was like, make my job easier. Yeah. And like you're saying it somewhat facetiously, but yeah, if you can make the life of your manager or the one-up manager, whoever, a little bit easier, you're thinking about the strategies. Like you said, what are the things that are keeping them up at night and how can you help to approach that? I love that from that relationship. And generally, I think it seems to be that high empathy, high emotional intelligence spot of like, just be a nice human and recognize that other people's experiences aren't going to be your experiences.
Exactly. Exactly.
So as you go through your own leadership journey, I'm curious if there have been leaders along the way that have either left a mark on you or that you've been impressed by that have informed your own leadership style.
Yeah, I've worked with a lot of great leaders in my time. I've been very fortunate. I really gravitate towards the people that are authentic and not afraid to be vulnerable. I feel like when I was starting my career, the people at the top, so to speak, were mostly one way. They were pretty, hard charging, blustery, intense. And there weren't a lot of other examples of styles that were out there. I'm cognizant that the view changes as your seniority grows. So maybe now that I'm here, I can't see it anymore. But I really do believe the tone and tenor of leaders has changed in the past 15, 20 years. Now people are more human, more understanding. People that are jerks just aren't as prevalent as they used to be, in my opinion. And I think this is an outcome of a lot of great initiatives that we've put in place to diversify the workplace and leadership inclusion. And I think it just helps to have a lot of different points of view on the table and to be open and receptive to that, which I'm really happy to see much more of and hope that I'm contributing to as well.
Well, absolutely. And I think part of that, an example of that is you coming on to share more about that background. One of the things that I love about this podcast is that we get a chance to get to know that person behind the exciting resume. And I think in some ways, virtual has changed that in a way because we're now like peering into people's homes when you join like a video yes. call or whatever. So in a way, it encourages more vulnerability because you're like, I see your child walking around in the background, or like, so that's what your living room or office, whatever looks like. But I agree. I'm a big fan of that trend. And I very much appreciate you being willing to be that authentic leader, because I think that's what particular listeners can not only appreciate, but truly learn from. So this has been fantastic. As we start to wrap up, we do like to do a little bit of a rapid fire round towards the end to get to know the person a little bit more as well. So I'm curious, first rapid fire question for you is, what is your go-to form of escape? Movies, books, TV, fitness, something else?
TV all the way. We're in the golden age of it and I love it.
Okay. For TV, a recent show or series that you've been enjoying or recently finished?
Nothing recently. I've been too busy these past few months, but maybe my guilty pleasure is probably Grey's Anatomy. I still watch it after all these years.
I love it. I never picked it up, but my wife is a big fan. And so she references things from it. And I have I have no idea what you're talking about. If you had a week to do anything with zero restrictions, what would you do?
Oh, I would go to outer space. I think it would be such a cool experience to do space tourism and literally see the world from a different angle.
I love it. Once it gets to that point that we can send rockets up for that space tourism, are you going to sign up and do it?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So you and I both went to the Ohio State University. So I'm curious, what's your favorite spot on OSU campus?
Oh gosh, the Oval, absolutely. On a spring day with blankets, some food, friends, music, it's the best.
Absolutely. For those listening who have never been to Ohio State's campus, right in the middle of it is a huge green space that is with walkways and stuff like that. But that's the selling point, I think. If you do a tour there in the spring when it's nice weather and you're like, okay, I'm sold on this university. I've gotta come. I love it. So Zena, to wrap up, what is one final piece of advice or even perhaps a challenge that you might give to the next generation of leaders?
I'd say take chances on yourself. And by showing that you will do that, others will get the confidence to do that as well. So think about what makes you excited and energized and try to find that. And you might not do it the first or second or even third go round, but by keeping the energy and the hunger for looking for it, I think everyone will find it.
Fantastic advice. It reminds me of Chris Rock tells a story of if it's raining and you get a flat tire, if all you do is sit in the car with your hazards on, then cars will pass you by. But if you get out and you start trying to push the car yourself, then people will stop and help you along the way. So I love that advice of taking chances on yourself and other people see it to come in and help support it. Well, Zena, thank you so much for taking the time today to come and drop some learnings from leaders.
Thanks, Drew. It was great to talk to you.
And that's our show. Like what you've heard, please subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform. For show notes about this episode, links to things mentioned, or requests for sponsorship, visit pgalums.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at pgalumpod. We'd love to hear from you.
Learnings from Leaders is a production of the P&G Alumni Network, a global nonprofit founded by former P&Gers committed to community, enrichment, and philanthropy. With more than 45,000 registered members worldwide, the network connects alums through global conferences, local chapters, industry events, and online content. Our nonprofit foundation supports economic empowerment in communities around the world. To find out more, visit pgalums.com.
Now, here's a preview of next week's episode.
You got success through a team. You go through failure as a team. You rise back out of it through a team. So you're not alone. Often when people go through adversity, they personalize it to what they could have done differently or what's wrong in their life or in their career. The more you can externalize it and share that experience with others, it not only brings other people along, but you actually benefit from shared objectives and really leveraging each other's strengths. That really makes a team much stronger than any one individual, and reinforcing that throughout the entire company. You're not alone. It's always been easier to make it through something when you're doing it together.
That's it for this week. I've been Andrew Tarvin.
And I'm still Ruman Segal. Thanks for joining Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. We'll see you next time.